This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science in a good way as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
So, amazingly, it's your turn to teach me something. Whose expertise have you called on today?
Mine, actually.
Sacking off the experts?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Incredible arrogance.
Well, you know, sometimes you just know you've got what it takes, basically. So I decided we're going to do something for World Religion Day.
And you're the expert for this? Okay.
Bear with me. It's the third Sunday in January, and it's all about understanding between religions and faith systems.
Okay, so I'm going to make a quick point here. I'm not an expert on religion. You're not an expert on religion. Where do we go from here?
Well, you'll like this. I think it's time we redefined maths as a religion. Basically, this week we're going to be asking, is maths actually the best religion of all?
I've got two thoughts, really. Firstly, I'm immediately on board. Secondly, I think you might have broken the podcast.
This is stretching things too far.
Maybe.
Well, let's see. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we both agree that maths is extraordinary.
Yes.
Gives us insight into a hidden world full of fascinating, awe-inspiring insights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so if you look at it the right way, it's kind of a religious experience.
How are we defining religious experience? Just you sort of feel like...
That sense of awe you get from dealing with numbers and like, oh, look at, you know, like pi. We'll get into pi and infinity. And the strange relationships between that and imaginary numbers.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And sometimes I think just lots being of like mathematicians
blown,
feel
blown
like it's
away by the kind of what appears to be like the intrinsic beauty of the proof that you've just done.
Exactly.
And the way that just stuff will just drop out perfectly from something incredibly complicated. Yeah. And then you get to the end and you're like, ah.
It makes you want to sing a hymn.
Yeah. I think I'm buying this. Religions come in all shapes and sizes. There's the well-known ones like Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism. But some people prefer their religion a little more, shall we say, eclectic. There's Jediism, for example. That's a religion based on the observance of the Force, a ubiquitous and metaphysical power that a Jedi, a follower of Jediism, believes to be the underlying fundamental nature of the universe. Many mathematicians believe that the world of numbers has a ubiquitous and metaphysical power too. So can we consider maths a religion? Certainly has many of the attributes we associate with religion. It inspires awe and wonder among its devotees. It unites people in an effort to improve our understanding of the universe. It even has historical figures that we might think of as mathematical saints, people who were devoted to the subject in ways that made them sometimes sacrifice their own well-being in their pursuit of mathematical insight. What's more, maths has done a lot of good in the world and has few, if any, of the negative effects of many of the world's other religions. So that's why this week we're asking, is maths the best religion? Okay, so basically we're going to spend the next 30 minutes or so extolling the virtues of maths and then threaten to kill anyone who doesn't
share our beliefs. that's sort of religion, isn't it?
That's your view of religion.
In a nutshell.
That's what religious people do. Yeah. Not exactly, because I think I have to start off by actually making the case that maths is a religion.
Okay.
So what do you think of when you think of religion?
Stuff that's made up.
Exactly.
To explain things.
Maths is basically made up. So maths isn't provably true. So this is the whole thing where everything in maths is built on these things called axioms.
Yeah.
So whatever branch of maths you're in, you have a set of axioms,
yeah,
which are assumptions about the fact that something is the case. So like that 1 + 1 = 2. So
I remember doing the proof of that in my first year at university and be like, we're definitely doing this. And actually, it's quite interesting.
It is quite interesting.
You have to do it from the axioms that you've decided about your number system.
Yeah. And the axioms are just like arbitrary assumptions, effectively.
Pretty much, yeah.
But they're based on observation.
There's an additive rule, there's a blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I have one apple and then one apple, and that makes two apples. And then I do the same with bananas, and I get two bananas. So this concept of one and one being
two. This looks consistent.
It's sort of, it looks like it generalizes quite nicely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you never know whether you're going to get the sort of outlier where one and one isn't two.
Oh, no, but once you've agreed your axiom,
yeah,
then you do, don't you?
You do once you agree the axiom, but the axiom is the thing that you're just assuming.
Yes, okay.
And this is true across all branches of mathematics. So in geometry, there's the axiom that on a flat plane, two parallel lines will never meet, or that you can draw a line through any arbitrary point on a plane. And just sort of, there's various axioms, and they sound all quite boring, but they are all just
assumptions.
But
they create everything.
And they create everything. Mm. And then when people tried to sort of create a more solid foundation at the sort of end of the 19th century, along came Kurt Gödel with his incompleteness theorems,
yes,
and showed that it couldn't be done.
Mm.
That maths would always be based on things that were not provably true.
Mm.
And whatever system you build, and it's all self-contained and it all works within itself, but it's always built on something that you're basically just assuming to be true. So that was in the sort of 1930s, and you basically ruined everything. David Hilbert, who was like the top mathematician in the world at the time, had just laid out all these like 21 questions, maths is going to solve this, solve that. And Gödel came along with his incompleteness theories. Hilbert was furious.
Mm.
He was fuming. Because it was almost like somebody come along and say, God isn't real.
That's all bollocks, mate.
Yeah.
You take your spaces somewhere else.
So basically, I would say, it's sort of not provably true.
So that means that you require faith then. You need to have faith in your axioms.
It's faith in your axioms.
Mm.
Yeah. So, which is fine.
Yeah.
But the other thing as well is that thing we talked about, that sense of awe and otherworldliness,
mm-hmm,
right? And religions have that in spades, don't they?
Yeah.
God is everywhere. Yeah, God is three in one, born of a virgin, that kind of thing. And, it's very easy for people like us to say,
probably not.
Probably not. I remember the first time I heard a vicar actually say, Mary probably wasn't a virgin. I was really shocked. I was like, you can't just say
that. Stick to your story, mate.
Yeah. And then he said it was probably the result of a rape by a Roman soldier. I was like, you're not, you've not just broken this story.
Good.
No. I thought that was terrible.
That's too far.
Yeah.
Even if it's true, it's too
far. So, but we have things in mathematics that evoke wonder.
Mm.
And I'm not sure they stand up to like as much scrutiny as they should, maybe. So, so if I'm sort of taking off my, I'm a mathematical religious fanatic,
mm-hmm,
and I love pi and the fact that it crops up in unexpected places,
mm-hmm,
and I love infinity and I love prime numbers and all that kind of stuff, I can actually sort of, step outside of myself in some ways and say, it's just numbers, mate, calm down.
Well, yeah, but then you look at something like pi, which just keeps cropping up, sort of in places you wouldn't necessarily expect it. And that makes you feel like there's something special there, doesn't it?
I know.
Because it, why?
I know it does.
Because we can't really explain.
But I don't think it's acceptable to not dig down into that. And everything I've ever dug down into with pi, I've sort of, I'm not a mathematician, so I can't like do everything. But I sort of feel like, well, that would crop up there really, because that's something that deals with rotation. Mm. And it's effectively describing something moving in a repeated cycle, which is like a circle. And we know that pi is part of circles. Mm. So it's not that astonishing, really. Mm. So, and I hate to sort of do this, but like I've heard Matt Parker talk about the fact that he said pi crops up in when you're working out the probability of two numbers being co-prime, in that they've got the only number that divides them is one.
Yeah.
So like 8 and 9 are co-prime numbers. Mm-hmm. The only number that divides them is 1. And the probability that any two randomly chosen integers are co-prime is 6 over pi squared.
I hadn't heard that, and that's brilliant. Why?
Well, so when Matt Parker talked about it, and I love Matt Parker, I'm not dissing him at all. Mm-hmm. He said, this is amazing. We get pi cropping up in these unexpected places. It's just one of the joys of maths. But actually, when I dug down into this and you look at the formula for how you work all this out, you end up with your summed geometric series.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So you basically, have this sort of set of, 1 over n plus 1 over n squared or whatever. It's not that, but, thing.
Yeah.
But going on for infinity. Mm-hmm. And then you get pi out of that. Well, the reason for that, I think, and I might be wrong, and, if you're a mathematician, get in touch, is that when you do a sum of a geometric series, you always involve pi, because the way of solving it involves moving around a circle where the y-axis is imaginary numbers and the x-axis is normal numbers, and the pi is 2 pi radians so around the circle.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see that actually when you're solving a geometric series, you're always going to end up with something that has an expression of pi in it.
Mm.
And when you try and work out the probability of two numbers being co-prime, you involve a geometric series. So I'm just sort of unweaving the rainbow on that and saying maybe it's not that surprising, but I like the fact that it feels surprising, so I'm just going to live with it.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, I guess the discussion is around whether maths is a creation of ours or whether it is a sort of intrinsic property.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's sort of agreement on this, really, is there?
There isn't. No, but I think partly mathematicians just like the idea that it's a discovery thing. So they're discovering these amazing truths. And, I've seen Marcus du Sautoy talking about the kind of, amazing feeling you get when you stumble across a mathematical insight. Like he's, exploring unknown territory, and he's just, managed to get to this point where he's found this amazing thing.
Someone first explained small and big infinities to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, infinity is another great one, isn't it? Because that directly correlates to religion. I mean, religion's always on about the infinite and the mysteries of the infinite. And that's how you kind of trap people into thinking you're really quite profound.
Mm-hmm.
And math does the same kind of thing. And it's like, there is infinity. And that sort of blows your mind when you're 6 or 7 years old and you're in the playground. Like, what's the biggest number you know? And you can always add 1 to it.
A million plus 1. Yeah. Classic. Absolutely classic.
It is a classic. And then you discover that there are different types of infinities, and some are bigger than others. Like the let me see if I get this right, but there's the number of like odd numbers and even numbers are the same. Mm. They're both infinite. But the number of real numbers, which includes all the numbers in between sort of the integers, that's bigger. That's a bigger infinity.
Yeah, because the integers are a countable infinity.
Yeah.
And the real numbers are
uncountable. Yeah.
So it's a much bigger infinity. And actually, the best way anyone ever described that to me was just imagine that you're trying to do the positive real numbers, and you say, okay, where do you start? What's your first?
Oh, positive real numbers.
Positive real numbers.
Yeah, you can't, because you can go 0.00000001.
There's always a smaller. So you don't even know where to start. So it's uncountable.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, very nice.
I mean, you could definitely build a religion based on that.
Mm.
I think.
So I'm just going to fire some maths dons at you. What does Penrose say about this stuff?
So Penrose's view I mean, he's a Platonist, so he effectively sort of has this idea that we discover these sort of mathematical things that exist out there. Right. So he would say things like, you know, the dodecahedron, mm-hmm. it sort of has always existed effectively, even before we put a name on it, mm-hmm. as a concept. Mm-hmm. And then we've sort of discovered it as a concept. Mm-hmm. And this is very like Aristotle did this kind of stuff. And I think it was Aristotle who said, oh, you know, the God sort of built the universe on a dodecahedron sort of model kind of thing. And this is very sort of ancient Greeks are very into this kind of idea. So the Pythagoreans, they used to like go to work every day, like thinking about maths, and they'd enter through this arch that said all is number above it. Because they
nice. Really nice. We've got our religion slogan.
I mean, yeah, it's been done a long time ago. And this is and the idea is that everything can be broken down into numbers. But for the ancient Greeks, for the Pythagoreans, that was the integers, and they thought the integers were everything. So they were like, mm-hmm. you know, 1, 2, 3 are great. And if you can write them as a fraction, like 1/2, that's good. If you can write them as, you know, 3/4, great. And then somebody pointed out that if you have a square of side 1, the length of the diagonal is √2, which you cannot write as a fraction. It's an irrational number.
Nightmare.
As in, there's no ratio two integers that describes it. And they basically shut this guy down. I mean, it's, you know, the legend is that they took him out to sea and they drowned him in case he told anyone. And they sort of, you know, keep this sort of irrational number secret. And of course, pi is an irrational number, and you need to use that if you're building like temples with circles in or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a problem to sort of shut down all the irrational numbers, and it got them into huge trouble with zero. And like they couldn't like countenance the idea of there being a zero because it wasn't one of their sacred integers kind of thing. So there are problems with sort of making a religion out of this kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, it's a nice way to live, to think that you're, as a mathematician, sort of discovering this sort of hidden world. It's a bit like being a theologian. It's like I'm sort of trying to unravel the mysteries of God.
So I suppose, that, you know, ultimately, it's about whether the structure of the universe is mathematical or our best approximation of the structure of the universe uses maths that we've created and we're just sort of fitting it on and it fits nicely.
What do you think?
I actually don't know. I find it a really hard question to... I've thought about it quite a lot and I think I oscillate.
Do you?
Yeah.
I mean, I have been of the opinion, since I wrote this book, The Maths That Made Us, you know, my great work on the maths and how it's applied to civilization. Mm-hmm. When I was writing it, I thought, right, I'm debunking all of these myths. Mm. You know, I'm not going to tolerate the idea of, you know, because people make maths out into being like something that's like mysterious and like, you know, and you get all these YouTube videos about, how amazing the natural logarithm E is. Mm. And it crops up everywhere and it's just like this weird number that, you know, shouldn't really sort of have such significance. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, this is just creating a sense of, you know, priesthood, and you know, it's like we know all the secrets and you don't know them, and it puts people off math. So I kind of wanted to debunk that, but I still found myself like going, no way.
Yeah.
And like wanting to get into it. And and then like with the quantum physics side of it as well, trying to sort of, you know, see how that works, because that is purely mathematical theory, right? Quantum physics is mathematical. It's got pi in it. And you sort of think, why has it got pi in it? And you realize, oh, there must be something in the description that's basically about things going in circles.
Well, it's a wave function.
Yeah, it's a wave. So you've got these cycles of behavior. So you describe everything as a wave, and therefore you can just break it down into repeating cycles of sine waves or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, okay, you know, we've got that in there. And then you've got I in quantum theory as well, the imaginary number. Yeah. The square root of -1 is there in quantum theory. It doesn't work without it. And people have even done experiments showing now, like last year or the year before, there were experiments showing that if you construct quantum theory without the imaginary number, the square root of -1, which doesn't really exist in our world, you can't do quantum physics. It doesn't work. It doesn't describe how an atom is.
That's true of loads of sort of engineering problems as well. So you can solve lots of engineering problems. But, like, I mean, dynamics.
It's how we made all these sort of electronics is using the imaginary number as a way of sort of shorthanding all the cosine and sine stuff of oscillations.
This is the thing that I've wrestled with, and I'm sure you'll have a view. we have this sort of, we have the real numbers and then we have the imaginary numbers.
Yeah.
Are imaginary numbers any more or less imaginary than the real numbers?
No, no.
I don't think they are.
This is the worst name in the world. They shouldn't be called imaginary numbers, right? Because actually all it is you've got the set of real numbers, which describes how many apples you've got or whatever. But that's not enough to describe everything in the universe. So if you want to describe some of the processes of physics...
Which I do.
Which you do. You actually need another set of numbers called... you know, which we know as the imaginary numbers. And you have to have a kind of two-dimensional number which has these real and imaginaries together. You put them together and you do maths with them like you do with a normal number.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you can do a whole load of new things that are really useful, including quantum physics.
Yeah.
And so and
oh, you can actually have as many dimensions as you like.
No, you can only do it in eight. So you can have eight dimensions of numbers. So this is the octonions.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So the imaginary number gives us two dimensions, because you've got imaginary and real. And then you've got a thing called the quaternions, where you've got four dimensions of numbers.
Yeah.
And that works. And you can do like normal maths in that. And then you can do normal maths with an eight-dimensional number system. And after that, everything's broken. Like one plus one doesn't equal two, effectively. So you can't do it with any more numbers than just the octonions, which is an amazing discovery. Mm. And again, it's the kind of thing that makes you go, wow.
Yeah. And I want to ask why.
Yeah.
And actually, that is, I guess, those kind of things are what make me think these must be intrinsic, the mathematical properties must be intrinsic.
Yeah, so Max Tegmark, the physicist, he says that because you can't describe an atom without mathematics, basically the most fundamental description of an atom uses mathematics.
Yeah.
And there's no way to do it without that. He said, so that's the most fundamental description of our reality, you know, the stuff that makes up our bodies.
Yeah.
Effectively, its most fundamental description is mathematical. Therefore, the universe is mathematics. It has no intrinsic properties except mathematical properties.
Yeah.
So he would be like, you know, maybe not the high priest, but he'd be, you know, he'd be quite up there.
He's up there.
Roger Penrose is the high priest. Like, can we just agree on that now?
Yeah, we probably can, yeah.
Yeah. So you know, you can really see how all this stuff excites mathematicians quite easily. And it's like, you know, there's so much to dig into. In the same way that I think, you know, you would dig into theology and sort of try and make sense of, you know, Buddhist scriptures or anything else. You know, it's like there's just a richness in there that kind of makes you think about your existence and why you exist and what you're made of and how you achieve fulfillment.
And the ultimate goal of maths and all of the world's religions is just trying to explain the world.
Exactly.
They're both doing the same thing in very, very different ways.
Yeah.
It just happens that I sort of, I believe in maths and I don't believe in the other religions.
You're a believer.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, time for a quick break. When we get back, we'll be discussing why every civilization has maths at its core, whether maths can become a religious obsession, and giving an answer, hopefully, to today's question, is maths actually the best religion?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And we're back. So I am a believer in maths and the sort of intrinsic nature of maths, I think.
Welcome to my cult.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here, actually. But I mean, people have been sort of obsessing over this stuff forever, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the ancient Greeks are like absolutely into this completely. But I don't think people in the modern era are any less into it in some ways. So, you know, so like I said about Marcus du Sautoy, he says it like it just gives him a buzz when he sort of discovers a truth. There was a guy called George Cantor who did all the work on infinity. And obsessively, and basically, you know, nobody would believe him when he said, you know, there's lots of different kinds of infinity, and he ended up having a series of breakdowns because he just got so
unlucky,
so fed up with his colleagues. Really, it wasn't that classic sort of mathematical, oh, he's a genius, therefore he must be mad. It was just like his colleagues literally drove him mad. But then there was John Nash, who really was mentally unstable, and obviously. You see in the film, The Beautiful Mind is sort of, you know, math takes him down that rabbit hole and his mind takes him down that rabbit hole and he gets sort of enmeshed in lots of stuff. Did I ever tell you what I met him late in his life?
John Nash?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I interviewed him for New Scientist.
And?
Yeah, and he was like a man who'd been through electroshock therapy.
Oh, wow. But, I mean, he had an extraordinary mind.
Yeah, amazing. And so when we talk about like what maths has done for civilization, we'll talk about the Nash equilibrium, because I think we're all here because of his work. And then there's John Napier, who invented logarithms. Took him 20
really?
Years.
I'm ashamed to say I've never heard of him.
Oh, really? Yeah. Took him 20 years. So he created the first book of logarithms, effectively, which is just a way of turning multiplications into additions and divisions into subtractions. So it made maths easier for astronomers.
Yeah.
But like, you know, this kind of obsessive sort of, I'm going to do this work, I'm going to dig into this. I feel like these people are like mathematical saints in a way. They're like, you know, the people who, you know, we sort of talk about, you know, all these saints from Christian history where they were like obsessive, or they had visions, or they, you know, they did these amazing bits of work. There's a guy called Paul Erdos who worked, he only died in 96 actually, so quite modern, but he worked 19 hour days, mostly on amphetamines.
Sure.
Basically carried on doing that. He died at 83. He was still like taking amphetamines right at the end. But he's massively celebrated as a mathematician. He just, like, all he did was maths. And now mathematicians like calculate their Erdos number, basically, which is like, have I ever collaborated with somebody who collaborated with Erdos? And it's sort of, you know, it's flagged as a kind of way of calculating how much mathematicians collaborate. But I think there is a sense of like, you know, oh, are you related to John the Baptist who baptized Jesus kind of thing?
Club, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of being in that club. And if you've got an Erdos number of one, I think it's one, you collaborated with him directly, and then two, you collaborated with a collaborator kind of thing. So they like this kind of thing, the mathematicians. You know, they're quite into that. And then you've got people who, like Andrew Wiles, solved Fermat's last theorem.
Yeah.
7 years locked away doing it, didn't tell anyone what he was working on.
He get it wrong?
Yeah,
he got it wrong. Came out was like, I've cracked it, and then someone was like, you haven't. Yeah. He's like, okay, I'll go back in.
To be fair, it only took him a year to fix the problem.
But, it took a year though. Fuck.
So that's funny because that's like 8 years, and I looked up, like, Buddhists believe that Gautama found enlightenment while meditating under a Bodhi tree for, I think it was 6 years.
Yeah, there you go.
So slightly harder than Buddhism to come up with. And Jesus only did 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. So, you know, what I'm saying is Andrew Wiles is right up there.
Mm.
Grigori Perelman solved the Poincaré conjecture, mm-hmm. one of the massive outstanding problems, was awarded $1 million for doing it, turned it down.
Yeah, that's such a baller move.
Isn't it?
Just to be like, no, no, the satisfaction is enough.
That makes him a saint. You know, any other religion, that's sainthood right there, isn't it? So what I'm saying is, you know, we've got our saints, we've got our awe and wonder, you know, we've got our mystical sort of ways of describing the universe.
Does it guide you, though, maths?
I suppose it sort of does.
I mean, listen, we're not doing very much without maths, are we?
Nothing at all. So the whole of civilization, and this is what my book started from, is like, there's nothing in civilization that doesn't rely on maths.
No.
Right. And there's no civilization that didn't use maths. There have been civilizations that didn't use writing, but the Incas didn't write, but they used maths, and they tied knots in strings, and they had a civil servant who would go around the country with these knotted strings sort of adding up, like, you know, all the taxes that were owed and stuff like that. So
agriculture and stuff agriculture, massively required maths.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least if you're going to start trying to optimize stuff.
Yeah, and if you wanted to tax people who were farming fields as well, you work out the amount of tax they owed using the quadratic formula. That's what the Babylonians did. They came up with the, you know, minus b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a as a way of, like, working out how much tax people owed on their fields. But you don't learn that in school, do you? So...
But no, I mean, I don't think people like it more when you're like, I know it seems hard, but it's actually the tax man's equation.
But I mean, I mentioned John Nash, and his sort of the Nash equilibrium is a thing from linear algebra that basically tells you, okay, you haven't got what you want, but your enemy also hasn't got what they want. But there's no way of making either of your situations any better. So you just sit with that.
There's your equilibrium.
And that's your Cold War sort of nuclear missiles.
Yeah.
Calculus basically there, and you know that was so important that people who were using game theory to kind of the mathematicians in 1971, they met up with their counterparts in across the Iron Curtain and to compare things and make sure they'd worked it all out correctly using the same sort of, you know, assumptions and baselines. So they were allowed to meet because it was considered so important that they get their sums right for the, you know, basically the peace to continue to exist.
That's great, isn't it?
So it's amazing, an amazing sort of thing, you know. And then, you know, you get architecture like the Hagia Sophia was built by two mathematicians, one of the wonders of the world. And they designed it using maths, you know, using understandings of pi and how you translate that, you know, that into a dome structure and embed that in a half cube, which is basically, you know, what that beautiful dome is all about. Like we've said, imaginary numbers are, like, the whole basis of Silicon Valley is imaginary numbers. Mm-hmm. So that was built by Bill Hewlett's master's thesis of Hewlett-Packard. It was just like built on oscillator on imaginary numbers. You know, and they're there in the appendix of his master's thesis. It's like this sort of series of equations using imaginary numbers, and they used that to build their first sort of piece of equipment that they sold. They called it the HP200A. So they didn't sound like the first thing they'd built.
Oh, we've been doing this for ages.
So they set up.
You can see 198B.
They set up in Packard's garage in California, and that was the first electronics thing. And then other people started, you know, building next door and still working. So Silicon Valley is built on maths. So all I'm saying is, you know, our whole civilization is built on maths.
Yeah.
And we should start to worship it. Well, maybe not worship it, but you know.
So, because I'm looking through it and thinking, it does have all of the features, really.
I think so.
Arguably without some of the negative stuff.
Yeah. Like nobody's killing anyone.
No, not.
Not really.
There
was a guy, Niccolo Tartaglia, who worked out the algebra for artillery. Like what angle to put your cannon at.
That's what I was
thinking.
To get
the right range.
Weaponry.
Yeah.
has an unfortunate relationship.
Yeah. And once he realised that his maths was going to be used for killing people, he burned all his notes. So that's quite a good sign.
And that's how we've ended up in a world with no weapons. Thank goodness.
To be honest, then the crusade started, and the guy who was paying him said, "I'm going to need that." Yeah. So he had to write it all out again.
Yeah, that stuff you burn. That's not going to cut it. I've paid you, haven't I? So
maybe the only thing is it doesn't tell us how to live, but maybe it sort of says, you know, it doesn't matter how you live how you think, because you're just made of maths.
just made of maths. That's a nice way to end. I don't think you're going to get charitable status for your maths goal.
Like the Jedi's. The Jedi's didn't get it either.
But I'm in. I'm absolutely in. So, we'll answer this week's question. Is maths the best religion?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Good.
Yeah, no real argument, I don't think. And if I was going to sign up to a religion, maths, I think, has probably got the best chance.
All is number.
Yeah. It's such a good... I'd never heard that before. It's such a good slogan. It's quite creepy.
Yeah.
What are we going to wear? I feel like it's flowing.
Beige.
It's got to be flowing robes.
Have you ever been to a maths department?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
You're going to be wearing beige,
too
mate.
Much. Yeah, and a bit of... a bit of cord.
Polyester slacks.
Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys. So if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london. Or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.